Good evening, Detroit Lakes. This is the Vikings territory breakdown. The new look, the new feel, the new emotion, Vikings territory breakdown, breaking down the Vikings draft and some other gigantic NFL stories for the week for you here on KDLM Sports. I'm your host, Joe Johnson. Owner of VikingsTerritory.com, PurplePTSD.com, a bunch of other sites, TheDraftTeam.com, which you should definitely check out, FranchiseTag.com, a new app that's coming. Things are crazy. I like the Vikings again. I don't know what's going on. But I am joined again by my podcasting partner for the last, I'd say, 4 years, but he hasn't been around for a couple weeks, Mr. Joe Oberle. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm good. I gotta say, before we jump into the draft recon, speaking of Detroit Lakes, I spent this week talking to two Lakers from the area, people well known in the area. Golf coach Chris Smith and his daughter Kate Smith, who just won the individual Big Ten title for the University of Nebraska. I know how
Wow.
much you like the Big Ten, Joe. Yeah,
That's
she's a heck
right.
of a golfer and a five-time champion, state high school champion in Minnesota. And now she played
Yikes.
in Augusta this spring, and now her team's going to the regionals. And I just want to give her a shout out. I enjoyed talking to them both, and it was a lot of fun. I, of course, said I'd mention their names if they tuned in tonight. So hopefully they did. But so there's that. So I'm
That
doing
might
good.
double our ratings.
There you go. That's the whole idea.
I got word of mouth. It's the best form of advertising. We talked a little bit because as people I guess if I'm doing the math correctly, the two people that listen to this show may remember I've been very heavily promoting Ohio State guard, now current Vikings guard, Wyatt Davis. So you texted me about that, as did almost everybody. But I just wanted to get your really quickly your thumbs up or thumbs down on the draft if you had to choose one.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, I guess it's a thumbs up. I was pretty excited the first 2 days, and I like you and really liked the pick of Kelly Mond. I don't know that you don't dislike it, but I saw at some point that you were struggling with it, and until they picked up Davis. But I'm so curious about how this all goes down with the draft, and maybe our guest that we have is gonna can help us. I don't know, but it's just funny. How do they know for sure that Darrisaw is gonna be there at 23 and then trade down when they're sitting there at 14 and he's right there and that's the guy they want? Blah blah blah.
Yeah.
I started thinking of what's that baseball movie with Brad Pitt and
Moneyball.
yes. And when they get on the phone with all these people, they're probably asking them all these questions like they do, just not only to try to make a trade, but to try to figure out what they're gonna do, the other teams are gonna do, and they're probably gonna, then make a decision. Okay, they're not interested in this guy, so they're gonna,
Yep.
he's gonna be there. It was just, gave me visions of that. I was thinking about that, but because, I get frustrated with Spielman's trading down all the time.
Yeah.
And often it works out great, and once again it did, I believe. Although I, the word is he tried to trade up for Justin Fields, and we can certainly talk about that. But I remember texting at one point. I think it was in the third or fourth round. If he starts trading down, my head's gonna explode. And I said Zimmer's might too. And they hung on to all the third round picks, and they got bodies that I think is really gonna help the teams. Speaking of Davis, and I think Kelly Mond's a nice pick for the future, and some of the other holes. So, I if you want to grade, I'm usually under report these things. So I was about a B plus, but I think they did really well, and definitely helped the team. So thumbs up from me.
Yeah, I'll get into my feelings a little bit as we go along. I mean, I thought it was safe for the Kellen Mond pick, which I don't really understand that much, which we will talk about. I think shoring up the offensive line, I think the article I covered on Vikings territory The head of the college scouting department for the Vikings came out and said about 6 months ago, Zimmer came out with an edict, essentially, or a directive that they needed to get bigger offensive linemen, which, Joe, you'll recognize. I mean, every offensive line minded big guest we've had on this show, Tice, Burke,
Sullivan.
Yeah, we've talked to Sullivan. I mean, they've all basically said, I'd rather have, at the end of the day, a big offensive line that can.
Joe, I lost you. Are you still there?
Yeah, I lost you too.
Oh, my.
But yeah, I think that. Shoring up the offensive line obviously has been topic 1A or 1B on this show or the shows that have predated it, plural, for years. And so, I don't want to be that guy. I mean, I've talked to Sansevier a lot this week on his show, and he's written a couple articles where he's been really skeptical of the Darrisaw pick especially. And I think there's some valid concerns there that he's pointing out. But at the same time, I called for them to do these things, so I have to believe that they're going to work. And I kept thinking about that, though, Joe, because you've said a couple times, what would happen if they actually did the things I asked for? Then I'd have to actually see Cousins come through, and it's been the actual tangible fear of mine for the last couple days. And so I guess
pressure's on, baby.
We will see, but we have a joining us yet again. He's been on the show a couple times. He co-hosted the show last week. One of our draft experts from thedraftteam.com. As well as the upcoming site, MiniHoops.com. Mr. Josh Fry, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Good to be back on the show. Excited to talk about the Vikings.
As the draft guy, I wanted to kind of get where Oberle was before I introduced you to kind of see if you guys differed at all, and then just mute myself again and hear you guys go at it. But... What was your take on the overall draft? I mean, were you pleased by it for the Vikings?
I think Spielman did. I hate to use this word so loosely, but I think he did a masterful job of just
wow
that trade down in the first, is still getting Darrisaw, picking up Wyatt Davis in the third as late as he did, like. I don't know if he actually anticipated any of that or if he's just super lucky, but at the end of the day, he pulled off some really crazy moves, and I think they were one of the big winners of this draft.
Yeah, we were texting as the third round was going on, and I was like, and we did a marathon first round sort of coverage, you, Kirby, and I, and I kept twice. I basically said, I have this really negative article, but I'm going to wait because 10 minutes from now it could just age horribly, and I don't want to jinx it. But it turned out to work, I guess. Both those articles would have been like completely wrong within 5 to an hour. But I wanted, your interpretation of those trades and the fact that, one of the bigger stories coming out overnight after the draft or the first round or maybe the second round, I can't really recall, but was that the Vikings kind of had this moment of, oh my God, our guy Justin Fields might actually fall to us at 14. They didn't really expect that to happen. And then they were sort of, I think the word was surprised and stung by the fact that not only did someone else trade up and nab him, but it was the Chicago Bears, which means we could be dealing with the fallout from this for the next 10 to 15 years if he pans out.
Our guy, who's our guy? Is that your guy?
It seems like the Vikings really wanted him, but they didn't think it was realistic to get him, or if they were going to get him, they'd have to give up some sort of...
It was too expensive, yeah.
Exactly, to trade up. Yeah. We saw some, obviously, trades in the last couple of weeks that just the draft capital to even move up to, the 4, 5, 6 range is just insane these days.
Spielman would never do that. He'd have an aneurysm if he had to give up that much draft capital.
Exactly, and I feel like, too, at the same time, then you would have, depending on what you also would have traded up just to move up to, the 11th spot, I think was, or was it the 10th or the 11th spot? You wouldn't have been able to draft again until the mid-third round. You wouldn't have had those extra picks that you got from trading down, and then the offensive line would still be in shambles. It just didn't seem realistic to take Justin Fields. But, I mean, what was your interpretation interpretation of him as a quarterback? Do you think that the Vikings are going to be kind of screwed for the next decade? He's going to develop into the quarterback that the Bears have basically been looking for since as long as the Vikings have been looking for someone to draft and develop? Josh?
I mean, at the end of the day, I think the Vikings come out better with this than they would have if they ended up with Fields, if that makes any sense. I think those extra picks definitely help them a lot more than Fields would. Fields is definitely, don't get me wrong, he's a great quarterback. I think he's going to pan out to be at least something in Chicago, but I'm not convinced he's going to be like the Hall of Fame Aaron Rodgers type where you go into every single week fearing that he's going to somehow pull the game out and win it in the last possession or something.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. Why was he not picked sooner then if that was the kind of guy he's going to be projected to being? So, and we know the Bears have a propensity for trading up and drafting quarterbacks that aren't exactly Hall of Famers. So,
yeah.
Just to chime in off of what Josh said, the Vikings made some draft picks with the capital they picked up in that trade to be better right now. And I don't know that Justin Fields, he might make the Bears better this season than they were last year. But, you know, if you get him, would you have to start him instead of Cousins? And then I don't think he's as good as Cousins this first year. So I don't think the Vikings would be as good this coming season had they picked him up. Now down the road, you know, that we have to wait to see on that. But I'm okay they didn't get him, but I every article you see and everybody chirping about how great he is, it kind of just riles you when you hear, oh, the Vikings tried to go up and get him. So there's that, and then there's the Big Ten factor. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, there you go. It did kind of cast a pall over the celebration a little bit, I felt like, because it came out, at least when I saw it, like really late at night, and it was like everyone was so happy locally. Nationally, we didn't get as much credit or shine. A lot of the grades were B-, C+. A lot of people didn't like the Mond pick. A lot of people were kind of split on the Darisaw pick as well. But I feel like the quote from the Vikings essentially was, why would you give up all of this draft capital to move up to get a guy that you're going to sit a year? That year, again, 5 years from now, we probably won't even remember. But at the same time, I just keep going back to the fact that I would have been happy with him in a vacuum, right? But the fact that they would have then had maybe a third-round pick to start shoring up the line and then a bunch of mid-round spots, which is fine for guards, but obviously if you're looking for your left tackle of the future and you're in that range, it just felt like there's too many spots on this offensive line to fill for that to be realistic, even if they hadn't traded up, you know, because of what they got from the trade down, which, again, I think, as Josh put it, was a masterful thing, especially if Darisaw was their guy, which, of course, they're going to say he was because they always say that. But
it's all speculation anyway. I mean, you know, we're going on a guy's record that and how he did in college and how he performed. I mean, there's some things you can say, yeah, he's going to be able to do this in the next level. And there's good things to say in the same way about Kellen Mond. I will say this. I saw somewhere online just this morning that Trent Dilfer called Mond the steal for the Vikings. They said that he is going to be could very well be the quarterback of this draft as it goes forward. I don't know what it is that he's seen, but he's a pretty good evaluator of talent, I think, and he's shown over the years. So that was pretty pretty strong statement coming out of him. So you have to wait and see, and the Vikings hopefully have the guys there to develop him. It sounds like he's an intelligent quarterback. He's got better moves than the current one. And, you know, they say, well, maybe some robotic nature to his, you know, the way he is in the pocket, but you know, that's something you can coach up too. And he's not going to be expected to come in to play for 1 or 2 years. So he has time to improve it. It's something that me and some people I were talking to, we just wanted to see him pick a decently high quarterback and try to develop him for once, rather than grab him on the fifth or sixth round. And so I'm happy that they did.
Maybe Dilfer likes him, because I was looking at the NFL.com draft profile for Mond today in preparation for the show, and the quote that stood out to me was confident game manager. I do think he fits with the Vikings. I mean, in 2020, he was that, I would say. I mean, Texas A&M had a strong run game. They ran a lot of play action. I thought it was kind of interesting, though, that, you know, one of the things that they say that he's talented or really good at is RPO and red zone execution. And to me, the quote that jumped out was the big fight between DeFilippo and Zimmer over RPO, and the quotes therein of Zimmer's screaming expletives about being a RPO team. He was clearly not a fan of that. Josh, what is
that? Was kind of negative, Joe. Come on.
I know. It's the Godfather quote. You know, every time I think I'm out, the negativity pulls me back in. Josh, though, what would you say about Mond? I mean, I saw a lot of people, Vikings fans, putting out, like, you know, Patrick Mahomes 2.0, but then I'm seeing a lot of, you know, confident game manager. You know, his poise and rhythm aren't that great, but he's also not that antsy in the pocket. I mean, where do you kind of put him?
I mean, I think he's definitely a developmental guy. I don't think he's got all the tools right now, but down the road, if you give him a couple of years just to learn the Vikings offense and then come in like year two, year three, I think he's got the potential to be a really great starting quarterback. I know there's a couple guys before the draft that were just giving him a ton of praise for his pocket awareness, his RPO abilities, and there was even a few rumblings that he might actually end up being better than Justin Fields. So I think the Vikings definitely got a really good pick, especially for a guy that was early third round. I mean, they'd done what they needed to do in that first round, and then the rest of it was pretty much just gravy. So why not try to take a stab at a backup quarterback, which, I mean, it's another area that just needs to be improved. Anytime you have somebody that's not named Sean Mannion as your backup QB, you're going to feel a little bit better. So I think it's a great pick.
And I wondered if there was part of them that, I mean, obviously he's going to be the backup, but I also saw in the NFL.com draft profile that an unnamed scout said might lack consistency in regards to he's kind of erratic with his completion percentage to ever become more than a solid backup. I obviously don't think they would take him in the third round and just say, well, he'll be our backup forever. I think that he has some of the tools that Cousins doesn't, that really I think Vikings fans are salivating over, that we've just touched on: his mobility, the RPO stuff, and where that is in the league right now. Whether or not Zimmer and company are the regime to modernize their offense and do things that way, I question. But I guess we'll see. I mean, it'd be really exciting to have an actual, you know, mobile quarterback alongside, you know, Dalvin Cook. Look at what a guy like, you know, Josh Allen does.
I think that Cousins should contact Aaron Rodgers and they can get an apartment together and have a little pity party.
So I wrote like my 50th I Hate Diggs article over the weekend because he yet again shaded the Vikings for no apparent reason on his Twitter. And, you know, I was kind of going after people that were saying, well, you know, the Vikings suck, Diggs is right. And I think two things can be true at the same time. The main thing there, though, is that the Vikings, I don't think, ever really mistreated or lied to Diggs, even though he manifested that they lied to him by drafting Dalvin Cook. But the difference between Cousins and Rodgers, I think, in this instance, reinforces that, because it was reported, obviously, what some of the things that Rodgers was mad about, or the final straw, not being included in decisions of player personnel that were released, so on and so forth, or obviously the Jordan Love draft pick. The Vikings actually told Cousins ahead of time that they might take Mond in the third round, and I think that, you know, in the article I wrote about Rodgers this weekend, you know, I don't think any team is ever going to kowtow to even an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson and say, well, yeah, just, you can be co-GM like LeBron James and come in and – but you would think that a guy of Rodgers' pedigree would be at least not sitting at home watching the draft like the rest of us, getting the news of Jordan Love like the rest of us, and then blacking out after drinking an entire bottle of tequila because he found out, or he didn't find out, you know, from the
Jeopardy
team itself.
Must not have been on, Joe.
And so I think it's the Cousins, the mom thing, it just shows that, you know, there's a right way to handle these awkward situations, and communication is usually the key. But since you brought it up, I mean, do you think there's any actual realism to Rodgers not playing for Green Bay this season?
No more chance of you becoming, you're staying positive Nelly for the, or, you know, non-negative Nelly. They're both going to happen. He's going to play for the Packers and you're going to turn negative at some point.
Oh yeah. I'm already halfway there. it would be great. It would also be great if the timing lined up for him to come to Minnesota. I mean, I would love that jersey next to my Favre jersey. I mean, that was the main
thing. I just want the turmoil to continue, Joe. I just want this to keep going on and dragging its tail into the off-season stuff. And by the time camp rolls around, it's still undecided what they're going to do. And he's still bitter and you know, then again, it could backfire. Last year, he played really pissed off and became the MVP. So maybe he does so again. But I think it's, you know, having that kind of crud going on between you and the quarterback and your, you know, your staff is not good in the long run. So it's fine with me. Just keep it going. Keep these stories coming. Let Favre was chirping in today. He was saying that he thinks his days are over in Green Bay, and he doesn't know squat about it, you know, as far as I know. So I just keep talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, Josh, what do you feel about the situation in general, or do you think that there's a chance that Rodgers either sits out or forces his way into some sort of trade to an AFC team, I'm sure?
I mean, I do think that it's a little telling that Denver didn't take a quarterback, especially in the first round. I think they might be anticipating something, but I'll also say that you guys might be in luck. This turmoil is going to continue. I don't think he gets traded before June 1st because of how high his cap hit is. So I think we got at least another month or so of this stuff going on before anything actually happens.
You know, they did pick up Teddy, though, didn't they?
Yeah, but that's a really good point, because everybody was saying whether he's going to be the veteran in the room for whomever they end up taking, you know, and that didn't happen. So, I mean, that's good for Teddy's career. I'm sure he'll get another chance to prove that he can be a full-time guy, even though I think nobody really thinks he can be. But
doesn't make sense, Joe, Joe and Josh. I mean, wouldn't you have wanted to trade him now before this draft so you can include some draft picks from this year and next year to pack, so you don't take too big of a hit in one season or something like that? Does that make sense?
I mean, it would make sense, but I just think that cap hit is just so massive, and it's been a thing for a while, but I think the Packers were just trying to throw it under the rug for as long as possible, and then all of a sudden on draft day, Aaron Rodgers and his agents leak something to Ian Rappaport. Yep.
But they said it was reported that from Rodgers at the Kentucky Derby that he was mad that it came out at all. So that was the report I read, that was someone put a microphone in front of him at the Kentucky Derby, and he said he was really disappointed that this came out, because this had been festering for a long time behind the scenes. So I'm not sure what.
Do you think maybe the Packers could have said, let's make this public and try to force a pre-draft trade, since we haven't gotten anybody to take us up on it? I mean, maybe they've been working on this for a while, and they said, well, you know, let's just see if we can, in the 23rd hour, put something out there. I don't know. I love it. Joe, you nailed it, though. I mean, it's just – and Josh, too. I mean, it benefits the Vikings. It benefits to their fans. The drama is great. It just seems like, you know, my entire life being cognizant of football, the Vikings have had a Hall of Fame quarterback, or the Packers have had a Hall of Fame quarterback playing, and the Vikings have been through 37 who's either has-beens or who's that, and it's just great to see that now that the both of those Hall of Fame quarterbacks basically end in a gigantic Hindenburg-style disaster with the organization. I think that we might see a few more Roger Deers coming this way, who Roger was a lifelong Packers fan, and then at like 60 switched over to being a Vikings fan because of how the Packers treated Favre. So hopefully we get some more of those people who I actually respect too much outside of Roger. He's a great guy.
I just can't see it happening. I just don't think there's any way that he's gone. I think it is Rodgers and his divaness coming from. I mean, he was bitter when he got drafted at 24 and bypassed by everybody, and he's been bitter about this and bitter about that and along the way, and always got kind of his you know undies in a bunch, it seems, and this is him again. Now I think there's some legitimate reason here. They should have communicated with him, but I think cooler heads prevail, and you work something out. They do something to make him happy and pacify him at least for a season, and when it makes more sense to trade him away or part ways with him or something. But man, you can't possibly do that. I mean, he's still in his prime when he's just the
MVP. Just won the MVP.
You can't say, okay, I don't think we're going to go with him next year. We're going to bring in Jordan Love, who's done nothing, and you got a team that you're building that has been two out of the last 3 years was, or maybe the last 2 years was in the NFC Championship game. I just don't get it.
Can you imagine though him like on the Colts or something? I mean, that team would he would anywhere he would really go, they'd instantly be thrust into the conversation of contention. For the most part, but him in Denver, ugh, man.
Yeah, that's fine with me. I would like to see him in the AFC, and I would like to see him in a team that's not on the cusp, like you're saying. That would
Jets.
Make me very happy. Now, Josh, you're affiliated with Green Bay, right? Wisconsin, no, or is that a different?
I'm a Saints fan, so I don't know if that's any better or worse for you.
Okay.
Let me explain it this way, Josh. All right, I've said this before. Vikings fans are raised to hate Packers fans, right? It's like in the DNA of being a fan of the Vikings. It's always there. It's existed forever. It's a great rivalry. Up until recently, it was like a 500 split over the decades of who won what regular season and playoff game. The Saints, or I should add, the Packers are in our division, right? And they're our border sharing team. Minnesota, Wisconsin have a rivalry, so it just makes sense.
Right.
The Saints earned our hatred in a different way, so I feel like it's much more vitriolic because of how they actually – it's just a random, you know, NFC South team that all of a sudden you would have really no other reason to hate outside of what happened in 2009 and since. I think that the hatred for the Packers sometimes is a little more like campy and like jovial. It's kind of like ribbing somebody, whereas the Saints' hatred is more like, you know, bring a knife.
yeah,
you know what I mean.
They quickly got up to speed with a real hatred between these two franchises. There's no two ways about it.
In the playoff stuff, and then you have the Kyle Rudolph non-pass interference call, which it was just like the greatest, one of the greatest moments in Vikings history, in my opinion. How did you become a Saints fan?
So we've talked about this a little bit, but I was born in Wisconsin, but I also spent a few years down in New Orleans. So that's basically where I became a Saints fan. And then I moved back to Wisconsin and realized that I just couldn't stand Packers fans. So did not want to root for the Packers.
That is easily...
I really like Josh.
That's it. You know, he's the one. That's the one valid reason to be a Saints fan. You found it, man. You should do one of those NFT tokens. That's how unique the situation is. But getting back to the draft itself, I prefaced a little bit the articles and the segment that I do with Sansevier every Monday, and he had pointed out that NFL.com had essentially said that Darrisaw had issues, motivation issues, you know, finishing blocks, finishing games, he releases before he should. Nonchalant, I think, was the word that Sansphere kind of latched onto. And basically the crux of his article, which is a nano column, so it's usually like 400 words, it's really small, was those quotes and then him saying, you know, Randy Moss was nonchalant. You can get away with that as a wide receiver. When the ball's not coming your way, you can't get away with it as the blindside guy. And, you know, he, being Sansphere, he kind of gussied it up a little bit and you know, really said he was down on the pick because of it. And there was just this gigantic, he said he's never in covering the draft since 1983, he's never gotten more emails than he did from that article. And so I wanted to get your interpretation of Darrisaw, Josh, and see where you would put him in terms of the tackles available in this draft. I mean, do you think that the Vikings pegged him at 14 and then when they traded down they got lucky, or they knew something that they could still get him? Or do you think that maybe it was a reactionary thing because of the field situation, they traded down and Darrisaw was there but wasn't necessarily their top guy on the board, but you know, he was available?
Yeah, so I mean, as far as the motivational thing goes, I'm not super concerned about that. I mean, obviously you'd like your guy in college going out every single week, trying to do his best. And I mean, I'm not going to say that Darrisaw wasn't doing that, but I think it's a little bit different when there's a paycheck on the line as well. I think now that he's actually playing professional football, he's going to be a lot more motivated than he was in college. And I mean, his talent is still unbelievably good. Like if that was him playing unmotivated, I'd be terrified to see what he does when he actually is motivated and plays really hard
did
every
he,
week.
Did he like not give up a sack at all last season? Or
yeah, maybe it was like 800 passing, or it was 800 snaps or something, and didn't give up a single sack.
And
so
like,
I mean,
two like quarterback like pressures, maybe. And that's not to interrupt you, but that's a very valid point. That if that's him coasting from time to time, yikes.
Yeah, exactly.
The point on those sacks too, though, is you got to take into consideration who he's protecting. You know, a Fields as no, who's no, he's not a Fields. That's the other guy. Sorry, Davis. I'm thinking his Darrisaw's quarterback was more mobile than Kirk Cousins, so that may not just translate right away to the NFL. But I'm not down on him. I'm happy for him. I agree with what Josh said. You know, put a new contract out there in front of him for 4 years down the road, and you should see somebody motivated to protect the quarterbacks, you know, right out of the gate. So hopefully that's what we'll see.
Yeah, and I mean, as far as like his actual draft position, I think there's definitely a gap between like Sewell, Slater, and then the rest of the guys, but I don't think he's any worse than anybody else that they could have gone with. And then that trade down, I think they do it just because you look at the guys drafting from 15 to 23, and there's not a ton of teams that were going to be taking offensive line there, and I think that's what the Vikings' thought process was. And obviously the only one taken was Alex Leatherwood, which we'll see how that one works out with Vegas.
And what was that all about?
It's just the Raiders, man. they always pull off some sort of crazy reach in the first round ever since Gruden got back there.
I think the graphic we talked about on the show was that the ESPN's algorithm said that there was a 60% chance he'd still be available like in the fourth round or something.
Yeah. I think it was 60% that he'd be available when the Raiders picked again at like 53
okay.
or whatever it was.
That makes more sense. But
Josh, along those same lines, how about Davis? How did they know, or did they get lucky again, that he'd still be around that late? Because, you know, there were, you know, before the injury, he was, I mean, Joe and I, you and I, we were talking about him in the first round pick months ago. And, and even then I was listening to something today. I mean, a lot of people had him still going, you know, in the late 20s, you know, in the first round. How does that happen that this guy's still sitting there that late in the third? I just don't believe, is there something we should know that we should be concerned about?
I mean, I think teams may have overthought this draft process a little more than other years, just because they spent so much time just sitting on their hands looking at tape. I think the 2020 season, where he took a step back, had a little bit of injury issues that might have scared some teams off. But then again, we also just don't know what teams are actually thinking when they go into these draft rooms and actually make their picks. Obviously, Wyatt Davis was a lot higher on the analyst boards and our boards than on the team boards, and that's just the way it fell.
That's weird. You know, that pick, I think, made the draft for the Vikings. Those first three picks, you know,
yeah.
to get him there to solidify the offensive line, get a quarterback for the future. And all of a sudden I would say, okay, Zim, take her away. The offensive side would go sit down. I mean, I thought that was a huge pick.
You know, and the Vikings have, even before this draft, spent more top three picks on offensive linemen in the last couple seasons in the draft than any other team. But the one kind of sticking point to me was that they kept drafting, and this has been the case really under Zimmer the entire time, outside of like a Drew Samia. They don't like to draft guards who have actually – they don't like to draft guys to play guard who have actually, you know, played guard before. I still don't understand the Ezra Cleveland pick now, especially after this draft, just because physically he doesn't really look or play like a guard. He's not.
Isn't it position flexibility, though?
Well, I mean, he never played for them. I just think they identify something in – maybe that these guys can end up playing tackle if they have to, but at the same time, tackles are usually, or guards are usually much more compact and you know, kind of core strong, as opposed to Cleveland has never played guard before, and he's never been on the right side either, and he looks like a tackle and plays like one. But taking a guy like Davis, I think it shows that they have learned from those mistakes, which is what has been my gripe this entire time. And it's hard not to get excited about the prospects of this offense with time. I mean, what they were able to, Justin Jefferson was able to accomplish, you know, last season, and Cousins' numbers, especially after the bye, like three picks and 30 touchdowns. Like, it just, if they even have a mediocre pass blocking line in 2021, there's no doubt that they should have, barring injury, in one of the top offenses in the NFL. And that's incredibly exciting considering all the things they've done on defense, or that they'll get back just through the virtue of time and people healing. That kind of brings up an exciting pick for me, and I always do say that if I am biased towards the Big Ten, but I'm also biased towards wide receivers. I just love, that's my favorite position to talk about. And the Vikings drafted a guy that checks both those boxes from Iowa, Amir Smith-Marset, who has this insane statistic that obviously can't translate to, well, actually it could, depending how frequently they use him at wide receiver three, but he scored a touchdown on 12.5% of his catches, I think last season or in general. And Iowa isn't really known as a team that has good quarterbacks. I mean, I don't think the entire time he was there, they had a quarterback with above a 60% completion rate. So he's a playmaker. That actually, I wrote an article about him being perhaps the steal of the draft amongst a lot of steals of the draft the Vikings got, and how he kind of looks physically. His combine numbers are really close to Justin Jefferson. They both had a 4.43 40. They both have the same hand size, the same near height, the same vertical jump by a half inch, broad jump, all that stuff.
I don't think that 12% stat is so great. I did that in high school. Of course, I only got thrown 10 passes. So.
Yeah, you only got one.
sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
But, you know, I feel like if he, through the virtue of time and his deep threat ability, the Vikings could just – further have this embarrassment of riches on offense. And so, Josh, I wasn't sure if you hadn't looked at him at all before the draft or after, but I was wondering if you had any thoughts on on Smith Marset or the offense post draft.
Yeah, I mean, Amir Smith Marset, you pretty much nailed it. He's kind of just another Justin Jefferson type, at least that's the way he played in college. I think if nothing else, this definitely allows the Vikings to become more creative and more versatile with their offensive schemes. He's a 6 foot guy. He's 180. He's not small, but you can swap him and Justin Jefferson in and out of the slot at any time. They can run all sorts of different kinds of routes. So I think that it's just another really good depth piece. And wide receiver three is something that at least some people have really been calling for this offseason for improvement. And I think they've done it here.
Yeah, it really changes up the room, doesn't it? All of a sudden, we're looking at Chad Beebe and BC Johnson, and kind of just going, "Oh well." And this kind of puts a little jolt into that room, and kind of makes it look exciting again. I think it'll make the competition pretty heavy in there, and so I'm kind of excited about it too.
And I think he's gonna be big in the return game. I think at least that's a reason why. They nabbed him, you know, last season. They used a fifth on KJ Osborne almost solely to be their kick returner of the future, and that didn't really pan out. And so I think there'll be competition there as well. But yeah, I'm getting all excited. This is sad. I'm gonna buy the new Xbox probably just to play Madden, like, but do it so the computer plays the computer, so I can pretend it's real.
I saw today they were going to sign Zylstra's brother.
Yeah, right? I saw that too. A Mankato guy.
Yeah, yeah, that's the new pipeline for Minnesota Vikings.
man, but yeah, it's really sort of weird just to be excited about the team. You know, the reason I can say this very quickly. The reason I was so frustrated for so long is because they were so frustratingly close, a piece or two away, that they just seemed to refuse to actually just spend a third or fourth round pick on, and or two or three of them to figure that out. And so hopefully this will be the key that we've all been looking for. But on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I've been making jokes about Chaz Surratt just because I can't imagine a guy with the first name Chaz being good at sports for some reason. I keep thinking of Chaz Palminteri, the guy that did A Bronx Tale with those big teeth and him trying to tackle somebody and breaking his collarbone, and I just can't get that image out of my mind, and that's the type of great draft breakdown content you get from Joe Johnson. But the more he's kind of a tale of two separate... it's like a cognitive dissonance thing with him, almost the same as Kellen Mond, where you see, you know, he's he was a quarterback converted to linebacker, right? So a lot of the negative feedback on him is that his instincts just really aren't there. He doesn't really understand angles that great. Diagnosing the action, he has issues with that. He's inconsistent, but because of his physicality and his sheer talent, and then also the quote that I wrote down was unwavering level of determination combined with physical talent makes him.
Ooh, that's
he's been you know, an ACC defensive player, first team, second team, so on and so forth, and he gets numbers on the stat sheet, but he just seems incredibly raw. And so is that your interpretation of him, Josh? It seems like a lot of the stuff that basically can be fixed with time and proper coaching, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely raw right now. He'll definitely need some coaching up, but honestly, he could become Anthony Barr's replacement at the end of the day. Obviously, with that restructuring, there might be a need for outside linebacker at some point in the next couple of years. So I think Surratt can jump in there and at least be productive from that position. I'm a little bit skeptical just because I don't know if I would have taken him that high, especially when you got a couple other third rounders coming after. But I mean, they took Wyatt Davis after that, so you can't really complain too much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it might have been a little bit of a reach at the time, but I think looking at the draft as a whole, I think it makes enough sense for them to do it.
Yeah, and he'll have time. I mean, that's the whole thing with this team. I mean, especially, I mean, which is kind of weird because last season the defense was so depleted, but, you know, you're getting a lot of guys back. And so you have the luxury, I think, of going for guys like Surratt, who you normally wouldn't if the need was greater. But you can say, well, you know, we're looking at shoring up the offensive line and then a bunch of depth pieces, and that allows you to go after talent over kind of a plug-and-play sort of guy, which is a good place to be and should excite a lot of people. What was your interpretation of your squad's draft then? In the Saints, did you like what they did?
I did not like the first two rounds of this draft. I thought they reached on both picks. The Peyton Turner pick out of Houston, I thought they could have gotten him probably at least in the second or third round. So I think that was a strange one, especially when corner is definitely the biggest need for the Saints right now. And then the Pete Werner take in the second round, I don't know if I like that one either. What was that?
I said Ohio State.
Ohio State, yeah. I mean, he does have the Big Ten thing going for him, and the Saints, they have a ton of Ohio State guys on that team, so it might work out. I just think both of those picks were reaches. I do like the Ian Book pick. I think that was in the fourth round. I think,
yeah,
honestly, if there's a guy that could turn into the next Drew Brees in this class, I think he's got the chance to do it, especially Ooh. Since he's with Sean Payton.
Yeah, he's the Notre Dame guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's he was. I mean, that ever Notre Dame obviously is one of the most storied teams in college football, and I think he's got the winningest quarterback in their history. But then again, they like Ohio State, I don't think they've generated a ton of quarterback talent. I mean, outside of what
Joe Montana,
and yeah, and then was Flutie from there?
No, he's Boston College.
Oh, there you go. Catholics, that's where I'm getting that from. Pro Big Ten, pro Catholic quarterback. Yeah, I think the Vikings have positioned themselves to get right back into the thick of things, and I genuinely cannot believe it, to be completely honest.
You know, interesting, Joe, that the Zimmer's rep, and it's earned since he's been here, is good year, bad year, good year, bad year. And so I'm thinking we should see a good year, but I'm thinking, though, because now that they've got such a young line that they can hope offensive line they can hopefully build together, and he shores up the defensive line, and I think what they've done through free agency and the draft, they've certainly improved. I think this team should ascend, you know, and not do this back and forth each year, you know.
Yeah.
I think, you know, prepare this Mond if to take over at some point for. You know, when he's ready to do so. And so then you keep getting better each year, and you don't keep doing this, you know, 11-2 or 11-5 and then back to 8-7-9 or 8-8. It's like, you know, why does that keep happening each year? It shouldn't. If they're a young, strong team building together, I think they should grow and ascend. And I'm hoping that trend changes in the next couple of years.
It's a very strange thing. You know, that
yes,
that happens. I mean, I think the cause is kind of been different each season or each time. It's not like necessarily like a hangover, in a traditional sense. So it's kind of hard to get your head around, especially considering, you know, Zimmer's regular season record is pretty good. But with the expanded playoffs, I think they're set for the next few seasons. So at least they should be, barring some gigantic disaster. I wonder if they'll use Mond at all, like mix things up, Taysom Hill style, and like bring him out to do some RPO stuff every once in a while, to kind of keep defenses on their heels. I've never really been a fan of doing stuff like that, but that's just because I keep thinking back to the Wildcat and how much I hated that. Everyone was like, oh, he beat Belichick once, let's keep doing it for no apparent reason.
It'd be fun to see that, because then at least they could keep the pressure on number one quarterback, Kirk Cousins, and maybe if if Mon shows something early, they can go into him next season and say, now, can you give us a little break on the cap here?
Yeah.
Kirk?
That's a really good point. I was a little surprised that he didn't restructure. I could see why. I don't think they wanted to do another restructure and extend. I think they'd reached the peak of that, especially since when they seemingly did that, he just got more guaranteed money across multiple years. Mm-hmm. But he seemed like the type of guy that would say, my contract is at this point hurting the team that has invested
right.
so much in me, and my family loves living in Minnesota, and my kids go to school here, and I like it here, so why not take, do what a lot of other quarterbacks have done and let's reinvest some of this money as opposed to all these guys on defense that are, sacrificing their minds and their bodies more so than Cousins is, or, taking these huge pay cuts left and right. Perhaps that's going to happen this offseason, like you said, because I don't see that $45 million guaranteed happening, especially if the dead cap is
right.
$10 million. There's just no way that's going to happen. But I think that's a good place to put a pin in it for this week. I want to remind everybody to check out thedraftteam.com. That is an amazing site that Josh is working on a lot with Kirby O'Connor, who you've probably heard on this show in the last couple of weeks as well. Him and Josh hosted the show last week. People can find Josh on Twitter at FriedChicken05. That's FreyeD Chicken05. You can also find Josh's stuff on Vikings Territory and PurplePTSD.com. Check out FranchiseTag.com, our new general NFL site. That's got a ton of post-draft content. I wanted to thank both of you guys for stopping by yet again and spending some time with me and my new hopeful, optimistic outlook that's going to last at least two more weeks. So that should be fun.
Right.
but we will return next week. This has been the Vikings Territory Breakdown for the 5th of May. Skol.